You're listening to Spice Radio 1200 AM's The Morning Buzz, and we are speaking to Charlie Smith, the editor of Vancouver. Good morning, Charlie. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Thanks, Karen. How are you?
I am doing very well, and I'm super excited to talk about today's stories because we have so much to cover here. So let's start off with the Liberal government's budget. You know, what stood out to you? Because this comes at quite a fascinating time, and somebody wrote in an article that I was reading this morning that, you know, the Trudeau's government's 8th budget is aimed explicitly at the fact that for many Canadians, life does not seem very fair right now. And the present feels inequitable, and the promise of a better future is not guaranteed. So kind of when somebody wrote that, I said, yeah, it is a very challenging time. So how do you think, you know, in terms of this budget, the Liberal government did?
Well, I think basically what they've done is they're continuing to run large deficits, which enrages the right. And they made changes to the capital gains tax, which upset some people in the business community. It's worth noting that the capital gains tax rate is increasing from 50% to 66%, but it's only for those who are earning at least over $250,000 in capital gains on an annual basis. So it only kicks in, and most Canadians are well below that $250,000 threshold in their income, let alone their capital gains income. So, but one of the things that stood out for me was, like the BC NDP government, the federal Liberals are really focusing on housing and making this a centerpiece and conveying the impression that they're doing something on housing. It sometimes takes a while for these measures to have effect, but they can help put the public's mind at ease. At least something is happening. The biggest challenge on housing is the labor force. But it was a 400-page plus budget document, $52.9 billion in new spending over 5 years, and you know, a promise of 3.9 million homes by 2031. And politically, I think it's a good message for this government to be serving up in light of the poll results and the problems that the Liberals are facing on two fronts. First of all, with the Conservatives rocketing ahead under Pierre Poilievre, but also the NDP. And I think this budget was designed by Trudeau and Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland to soak up some of that soft NDP support and bring it back to the Liberals. So on the whole, I think it's a smart budget politically, but it will take quite a while to see whether these housing measures actually have effect.
Mm-hmm. And Charlie, I just wanted to get your thoughts on this too, because something I've noticed that a lot of political analysts have been saying is they've been talking, of course, about Pierre Poilievre's reaction. Of course, he doesn't like the budget. We know that. That's no secret. But one of the things that's fascinating that a lot of political analysts say is he reacts to the budget, but he doesn't really give what his alternative policy would be. And is that kind of like a strategy that people do here? Because we don't really know what would he offer then instead.
Yeah, and one of the things opposition parties, the Conservatives in particular, pioneered this under Stephen Harper, is don't make too many promises. So what they would do is they had five priorities that they would put forward. And you call them priorities, so they're not fleshed out promises. And then the media is saying, where's your platform? And then the platform comes in the middle of the campaign after, you know, things have settled in terms of voter intentions. And I think Poilievre's going to do that again this time. He's going to be very vague, wait till the last minute possible before bringing forward proposals. And we can see it where the labor leaders, because they worry that Poilievre is really eating into the blue-collar support that the NDP has traditionally had, but even the Liberals. And calling on Poilievre, you know, attacking him now and trying to get him to be specific and pointing out things that Conservatives have supported in the past. And he's kind of doing this rope-a-dope, you know, where he's trying to avoid the blows but not really say anything too specific himself. And as this, we can expect this sentiment to increase, where people are going to be putting more of a spotlight on him as we get closer to an election and people realize that this guy might be prime minister.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see what happens. Charlie, now moving to the BC government. Now, a provincial rule to limit short-term rentals to a homeowner's principal residence plus one secondary suite or accessory dwelling comes into effect in BC on May 1st in 60 communities. And essentially, the government's hope is to limit housing from being rented through platforms like Airbnb when they could instead be used for stable long-term homes in cities where residents struggle to find appropriate housing. So what more do we know about this?
Well, basically, what they've said is strata hotels and motels that have been operating, you know, in a manner similar to a hotel or motel before December 8th of 2023 and meet select criteria will be exempt from the principal residence requirements. So the NDP government did a minor kind of modification to mollify some of the critics, but the principal residence is still in effect, and it's for communities with populations of more than 10,000 people, and also giving local governments the opportunity to bring in more bylaws. At the same time, the short-term rental hosts would be required to display a valid business license number on their listing. So when that business license is required by a local government, so that's going to be an enforcement mechanism whereby the public and the critics of Airbnb can go on and say, well, if there's no listing, then they can start raising hell about it. The other thing is short-term rental platforms are required to share data with the province, which is another interesting development, and I'm sure it's not going to go over well, and it hasn't gone over well with the folks at Airbnb and Vrbo and all the others, and local governments can request that the platform remove listings that do not display a valid business license. So basically these rules, I think, clarify what's going to happen as these short-term rental requirements kick in on May 1st. I think it's actually, you know, the perfect issue for the NDP because the market fundamentalists out there in BC United, like Kevin Falcon and John Rastatta, the BC Conservatives, they really hate this kind of stuff where governments are issuing all these rules and fiats to the private sector. And they're criticizing this, but I think it's a winner politically for the Housing Minister, Robbie Collin, and the Premier, David Eby. And the more noise that BC United and the BC Conservatives make about this, I think it's just going to motivate the NDP base to get out and vote. So I actually think this is a smart political strategy that the government's pursuing.
Interesting. Now, Charlie, finally, I want to talk about something I'm super excited about. The Doxa Documentary Film Festival is coming up very soon. What do we know so far?
Yeah, it's the biggest documentary festival in Western Canada. It runs from May 2nd to May 12th at different venues. I've watched a couple of the programs, a couple of the films so far. One was called Plastic People, and it's fascinating about how plastics are building up in our bodies as a result of exposure and microplastics and examining the health consequences. So Docs has always been very strong on environmental films like this, and the broadcaster who's hosting it is Zaya Tong, who is used to be an environmental broadcaster with CTV. So that's one of them. Another one I watched was called Tea Creek, which is about the Indigenous food sovereignty movement. And Tea Creek is this operation in northwestern BC where they train young Indigenous people to grow food. And it raises issues of how Indigenous people were actually competing in agriculture with the settlers in the 19th century. And the Indian Act and moving people onto reserves actually was a means to also eliminate the Indigenous competition in food production. And I didn't know a lot of these things, and I found it. It's an excellent documentary called Tea Creek, but also very informative about the history of Canada and a history that we've been led to believe that Indigenous people, they were hunter-gatherers, which they were, a lot of them, but they weren't all. A lot of them were involved in food production and farming, but that's kind of been erased from history. And this movement, the Indigenous Food Sovereignty Movement, is trying to rekindle that, get people involved in food production and also turn around their lives. So I really recommend that one.
And that's the thing. What I love about Doxa is you're like always learning something new. So it is definitely worth checking out. Charlie, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. Have a wonderful weekend.
Oh, my pleasure. Take care.